Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
We'll celebrate the victory of the denial of the easement for installation of the Dakota Access Pipeline by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Jeffrey Haas, civil rights attorney, joins us now. He is part of the legal team at the Standing Rock Camp in North Dakota, where Native Americans and others have been protesting to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. He is with us now to talk about the momentous occurrence and why the struggle isn't over and the litigation that remains over the violence perpetrated against the protectors. I feel like giving out a kind of appropriate whoop. This is wonderful news. And I'm most interested in how you look at it and how, of course, the sisters and brothers who have really sacrificed of themselves for this victory, how are they responding? And thanks for being with us, Jeff.
Well, thank you. Yes, it was a very exciting decision. As the chairman, Dave Archibald, said, was a surprise to him. And all of a sudden, the permit to go under the lake next to the Missouri River was denied, and they called for a new environmental impact statement. So that's all very good news, and it's a result of the people power, of the tremendous brave efforts of the people at Standing Rock, the 200 tribes and their supporters, to go out in the midst of incredible law enforcement repression and continue to push and not be moved. Be nonviolent, but be strident. And it happened on December 4th, as the day of the assassination of Fred Hampton, so I think the spirit of Fred lives in the activities of the people at Standing Rock.
And we should say, since you mentioned Fred Hampton, there's nothing circumstantial about this. Jeff has written a really important book on the assassination of Fred Hampton, who was one of the young Black Panther Party members in Chicago and was assassinated along with Mark Clark on that terribly fateful night. And I have to say that Jeff is also, when I just said he's a civil rights lawyer, he's been involved with the Panther Party. He's been involved with virtually every meaningful, righteous, individual, and political cause since he started practicing law. So I had to get that in since you mentioned Fred Hampton.
Well, thank you.
And the name of the book?
The name of the book is The Assassination of Fred Hampton, How the FBI and Chicago Police Murdered a Black Panther.
And I really advise people reading it. It's very telling.
Thank you. Again, to go back to yesterday, which, of course, is December 4th, the day of the assassination of Fred, there was a tremendous, there are about 10 to 12,000 people in camp. It's swollen already, and 2,000 veterans have arrived. It's an amazing scene. Somebody said, I can't find a place to pitch my tent. And the chairman went around in a truck and was telling people sort of individually or yelling out to people. And then it was announced over the main system. There was a whole holding hands and thankful prayer around the camp. And so I think people legitimately thank themselves and thank what they believed in for changing and causing the DAPL not to be able to get this easement. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the end of the struggle here, as we might expect. But anyway, legally, it certainly was a victory. Politically, it was a victory. And now, at least, their claims that they were not adequately consulted about their sacred sites, about their grave sites, about the danger to the water, at least has been acknowledged by the Corps of Engineers. So technically, the pipeline and Energy Transfer Partners and Sunoco don't have a permit to drill under Lake Wahi. And so that is the only part of the pipeline, or the main part, that remains. They have built, in spite of warnings to stop, they have built up on both shores. They needed a permit because this is federal land on both sides of the Missouri River. And so they ignored that, and they put all their eggs in this basket. And now they've been denied the right to connect the two sides. So I think that's all very good, and it is a statement, a recognition of what people did, not only at Standing Rock, but around the country. The pressure's been put on banks, that have loaned the money, and generally demanded of corporations some responsibility. And if an environmental impact study is actually done according to the regulations, and it's unclear whether we're going to talk about, is this just an EIS on the 10-mile stretch, or is it on the whole 1,200-mile pipeline and its impact on the environment, that's really unclear. But even under the minimum procedural requirements, which requires a new study to be made, and then it gets public, and then people have a right to object, it could be delayed 6 months to 18 months, I think, if the proper procedures are followed. I think in many ways that would be disastrous for the pipeline. They have contracts with the shippers or the people who drill the oil up in the Bakken oil fields that were done when oil prices were $100 a barrel. Now the production has dropped off. The need for that capacity is much less. The profitability is much less. And I think those shippers are actually looking for ways to get out of this contract, which, according to DAPL in court, said we could lose them because the contract requires the oil to be flowing by January 1st. That hasn't been verified, but that's their own claim. Also, the banks could call in their loans. So I think the likelihood that there'll be a complete EIS and this will be delayed, actually, I think it's kind of small. And I think we have to look at the response of DAPL, which is to say, we are not going to be deterred by this. We're going to continue with the plans we had, and we are going to basically do what we intended to do. Now, whether that means possibly challenging it in court, whether it means waiting until January 20th when Trump gets elected, or it could well mean we're going to drill anyway right now, and you just dare us, and we'll take the penalties. Are you going to send out marshals to stop us? And by the time those penalties get in court, we'll have Trump. So I don't see this as the end of things. I see it as somebody said, when you get an advantage, you've got to keep pushing harder.
Jeff, in terms of pushing harder, originally the Army Corps had told the protesters that they should be evacuated. Now, do the protesters plan on keeping on in terms of continuing the protest? And what is the position of the Army Corps of Engineers and the governor's office with respect to that?
I don't know what the Army Corps of Engineers and the governor are saying at this moment. It appears that there's a division that Dave Archibald said it's time to go home. We've achieved our purpose. On the other hand, many people in camp are saying, no, we're not going to go home. We don't trust either the Corps of Engineers, and we certainly don't trust the pipeline to stop. Only when they call off this project will we go home. So how many are in each group, it's hard to say. So it'll be a little hard to tell. Veterans will be going home in the next few days. But I suspect quite a lot of people are going to stay on and are not convinced that that they're going to not try to go under and complete the pipeline right through their treaty lands.
Well, the governor of North Dakota was very vibrant in mass media and proclaiming the violence of the protesters, saying that, of course, numerous efforts had been made to do reroutes, that the land itself in no way has anything to do or is there any claim by the Sioux on the particular land that they are trespassing on at this juncture, and was extremely vociferous and aggressive in the stance that the pipeline will be built and that it is de minimis in any sense of disruption environmentally. There are already all kinds of pipelines. It's an energy corridor to begin with. So it would seem that there are many miles to go before we sleep, so to speak. But how do you and how do the Sioux look at the politics of the governor in this, and indeed the politics of really it must be the Obama administration that at least gave this momentary respite from the Dakota Access Pipeline juggernaut?
Well, Dave Archibald, the Standing Rock Sioux chief, lauded the Obama administration and what Obama, the step he took, and said it will be go down as part of a historical memory of Obama, and very congratulatory of him. They held out an olive branch to the governor and to law enforcement, saying, we've been in conflict with you. You've gone way overboard. We think you've used excessive and dangerous force against us. But on the other hand, we want to rebuild those bridges. So that's, you know, and we're ready to do that. We have to live here, and we'd like to move forward. You know, that's the position of the tribe. Given the hostility of the governor, the sheriff, and Trump's declaration that he wants this pipeline to proceed, I still think it's a line in the sand. And now we have a sort of legal victory, and we can claim that the legitimacy of our claims have been acknowledged by the administrative agency. But I don't think that's going to be the end of the fight by any means. And I think they will try to undo it, whether they can legally, and well, we'll have to see. I don't mean to put a damper or diminish the impact of what everybody's done and the excitement that victory shows. But I think really it's a time not to step down. I think the campaign on the bank, on the banks that are financing this pipeline have been all over the country. There have been demonstrations. I think these are really effective. If people say we're going to take our money back and you have a duty to the climate, many of which have sworn to, I think those campaigns should continue and escalate until this pipeline is actually over. If they withdraw their money, then that would have a bigger effect on the banks as this decision by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So the people's work, we also have 450 people who still have felony charges or misdemeanor charges, mostly misdemeanors, but they're serious charges up here. And they don't want people to go home and forget them and say, well, let's move on to something else. They're the ones who put their lives out there. They put their bodies at risk. They're the ones who've kept this campaign alive. So it's really important to continue to support them in their legal and political efforts. And I know that we put out a statement, the Water Collectors Legal Cooperative, and through the National Lawyers Guild, demanding that all charges be dropped against the water protectors. And I think that's something that people should continue to push for also. And as you know, we filed a civil suit because they had used this tremendous excessive force using these crowd control mechanisms on November 20th. Many people saw the water cannons shooting water on people in sub-freezing weather. And a lot of people got hypothermia. They were using rubber bullets. One woman got hit in the shoulder. We think it was some kind of percussion or tear gas grenade, and she's had her arm basically put back on but not functioning yet, and we may go through many, many more surgeries. Another woman had her retina separated, and it's unclear whether she's going to lose the sight in that eye. I've heard she will, a detached retina. So we're also saying that somehow their use of excessive force, We want an injunction against them doing it in the future and a declaratory judgment that it's illegal.
Could Trump undo this decision by the Army Corps of Engineers?
I think that's a very good question. And the question is, could he do it legally? The EIS process, it seems to me, is hard to really speed up if it requires public input. If the reason for denying the permit was there wasn't adequate consultation and public input, that process takes a while. So if they were to retract that, and there'd be a hard way for them to move that procedure along quickly enough for it to help the APL. There's another issue here, and that it's, I think it's supposed to be -5 in the next few days. The possibility of rerouting it or doing more drilling is very difficult. Supposedly, the pad has already been laid under the lake, so I'm not sure whether that's more vertical drilling or just horizontal. So what could he do if he issues an executive order overturning the USAIS thing? Would that be challengeable? That may be one reason why Obama didn't issue an executive order, because Trump would come in right behind him and say, well, if you could do it, I can do it. So I think there would be legal challenges to him overriding the agency that's given this responsibility. On the other hand, we have only, if it's done in North Dakota, there's a court that's very sympathetic to the pipeline.
But I was wondering, in terms of the litigation on the issues of the violence, I couldn't help but remember, as I was watching some of the violence, hearkening back really to an earlier era when police in Birmingham, Alabama, attacked African-American school children with dogs and high-pressure water hoses. So here in North Dakota, the officers trained water cannons on hundreds of Dakota Access Pipeline protesters. So I think it's imperative that the litigation continue. Can it indeed continue? Can you get a temporary restraining order on something in the future to guard against this now, rather than something that is happening at the present? Is this what you would perceive of as a strong piece of litigation for all of those who have been so abused by the excessive force of the police officers?
Well, first of all, I think I agree with you that Lyle Kirchmeier, the Morton County Sheriff, is sort of a Bull Connor wannabe in his own way. And Native Americans in North Dakota are treated very much like blacks in Birmingham were. So that said, originally the TRO was, the judge immediately denied the TRO after 2.5 days because we hadn't been able to serve the other side. Well, it was a blizzard the day after it was filed, and one of the defendants is a sheriff 150 miles away. So it took us 2 days to serve, and he had already denied the TRO. We've now served everybody, and so we are going to be back in court. Whether we go in on a preliminary injunction, which we could do after 2 weeks, which would be basically the end of next week, or that might be the way we proceed rather than a TRO. You have to show imminent danger. And they may say, well, how is there imminent danger if the Army Corps of Engineers has now denied the permit and the chief has said, let's go home? It might be harder to show. On the other hand, I don't know what's going to happen with the veterans there and if the actions are going to continue. So whether it's a TRO or a preliminary injunction, I think the legal issues are still very strong. And it is important to establish that they can't use all these military techniques against protesters. So I think the litigation is important, will proceed. What kind of reception we're going to get remains to be seen. We think we have a very strong case of them using. This was not a situation where officers were threatened. They were some distance away from the people on the bridge. They had concertina wire, in many cases, separating them. So there's no reason to shoot massive amounts of tear gas and water cannons into small groups that really don't have a way to leave, much less these grenades that explode. And as I said, massive amounts of tear gas. They have these things called beanball, full of lead pellets. And we think that it would be, you know, it's very important to defend and stand up and say they can't use these techniques.
Well, Jeff Haas, thank you for taking time. I know they're here in the middle of a blizzard there in any event. And I really want to thank you most critically for the work that you have been doing, what you have committed to the cause of the protectors, and that is the protectors of sacred land and issues of sovereignty and the protectors of our environment who are there. And that's what the critical struggle around the North Dakota Access Pipeline and stopping it is all about. And we indeed, as Jeff told us so eloquently, must continue to be vigilant and be unrelenting in our support and continue, those of us who are not in the camps, to do the work to make sure that the banks and corporations who are supporting this, as well as those politicians that are, relent with the power of the people united against the Dakota Access Pipeline. But having said that, again, congratulations on this wonderful moment, which at least provides a respite and shows us that the power to the people.
Well, thank you. And, of course, my pay is the honor to work with people who are so committed to such an important issue, an important struggle, and are putting their lives on the line.
Well, you always have. And, again, our remembrance of Brother Fred Hampton, who was assassinated along with Mark Clark on December 4th. And I do urge people to read the book. It is a story for the times and continue.
I think it is a story for the times. The repression in COINTELPRO that were built in the 60s and 70s, the mechanisms are there, and certainly Donald Trump is not going to be hesitant to recreate those if they're not already being utilized.
Indeed. Jeff Haas, thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Celebrations abound at the Ochetee Sakowin camp just north of the Standing Rock Sioux Native American Reservation in North Dakota after that announcement by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers not to allow permits to drill to Energy Transfer Partners, the company behind the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, has been well received among indigenous activists here at this camp who have been arguing for months over the environmental risks posed by this $3.8 billion oil project.
There's been happiness, enough happiness that many people left. So maybe it went down from 10,000 to 9,000. The 9,000 that remain seem to have some mistrust of the U.S. government, that what they say may not be what they do.
I think they're going to continue to come. I think they're going to stay. I think they're going to stay until they see that pipeline veer off and go in another direction. At least that's what I'm hoping. That's why I'm here.
The announcement by the Department of the Army on Sunday came just as scores of U.S. military veterans arrived at the main protest camp to stand in solidarity with the Native American activists. Several busloads of former Army, Navy, and Air Force veterans marched toward a barricade set up by local authorities. The hundreds, maybe thousands of veterans arrived in protest to the tactics used by local police, who have been criticized for an over-militarized response to peaceful protests.
I wanted to show up with the veterans and show that, you know, we stand with the water protectors and the people here. We're their guests, and we're here to show that we stand with them.
We have a lot of love and empathy for our Standing Rock brothers and sisters, and we want to come support them and also support all the water protectors that are helping the Standing Rock people.
While tribal elders and environmental activists celebrate the victory, the announcement by the Army doesn't mean the project is over. A new task is now at hand to consider alternative routes for the pipeline itself. Uncertainty remains over both the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Ochetee Sakowin camp, as activists here say they put in too much time and effort to go home now. Near Cannonball, North Dakota, Manuel Rapallo, RT.
To make the announcement and let everybody know that it is true, and we can spend this winter with our families.
Anything that was outside is frozen. With this many people out there working, I mean, people wake up, they go out there, they're working, they're grabbing wood, they're cleaning, you know, the kitchens, they're cooking food for people. It's everybody here has a job, and it doesn't matter which direction they go, they got something to do.
It's windy and cold, but it's inspiring. I mean, There's a lot of people kind of in need, but everybody's surrounding them, and I think everyone's getting their needs met. Yeah, it's pretty extreme, but I think the camp's pulling it together, and we're going to keep going.
It's not very often, maybe once or twice in a lifetime, where you get to participate in a historical event. What happened here, we witnessed history being made. Tribes have presented the peace pipe to each other and actually come together to create this community of support. Military that have been used to brutalize the native population got down on their knees yesterday in front of the elders and begged for forgiveness. We have made history, and to be a part of that, even a small part of it, is, I wouldn't change this for anything.
Bess Clark Jr., the son of retired U.S. Army General and former Supreme Commander at NATO, Wesley Clark Sr., was part of a group of veterans at Standing Rock one day after the Army Corps' announcement. The veterans joined Native American tribe elders in a ceremony celebrating the Dakota Access Pipeline easement denial.
We came, we fought you, we took your land, we signed treaties that we broke, we stole minerals from your sacred hills, we blasted the faces of our presidents onto your sacred mountain, and we took still more land, and then we took your children. And then we tried to take your language. We tried to eliminate your language that God gave you and that the Creator gave you. We didn't respect you. We polluted your earth. We've hurt you in so many ways. And we have come to say that we are sorry. We are at your service. And we thank you.
And Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash, and log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.